On the plus side, it's suddenly loose enough that I can cover my boobs. Turning back to the suite, I swipe the key card against the door, but the lock flashes red. I go to try again, and the voice of Satan rings out from behind me.
You have to!
An impatient huff.
No, let me show you.
There is nothing in the world I wanted less in this moment than for Ethan to show up, ready to mansplain how to swipe a hotel key. He takes the card from me and holds it against the black circle on the door. I stare at him in disbelief, hear the lock disengage, and begin to sarcastically thank him. But he's already preoccupied with the view of my tan Spanx.
Your dress ripped, he says helpfully.
You have spinach in your teeth. He doesn't, but at least it distracts him enough that I can escape back into the room and close the door in his face. Unfortunately, he knocks.
Just a second, I need to get some clothes on.
His reply is a lazy drawl through the door.
Why start now?
Aware that no one else in the suite is remotely interested in watching me change, I toss my dress and Spanx onto the couch and reach for my underwear and a pair of jeans in my bag, hopping into them. Tugging on a t-shirt, I move to the door and open it only a crack so he can't see Amy inside, curled into a ball in her lacy wedding underwear.
What do you want?
He frowns.
I need to talk to Amy real quick.
Seriously?
Seriously.
Well, I'm going to have to do, because my sister is barely conscious.
Then why are you leaving her?
For your information, I was headed downstairs to look for Gatorade, I say. Why aren't you with Dane?
Because he hasn't left the toilet in 2 hours.
Gross. What do you want?
I need the info for the honeymoon. Dane told me to call and see if they can get it moved.
They can't, I tell him. I already called.
Okay.
He exhales long and slow, clawing a hand through hair that is thick and luscious for no good reason.
In that case, I told him I'd go.
I actually bark out a laugh.
Wow, that is so generous of you. What? He offered it to me.
I straighten to my full height. Unfortunately, you're not her designated guest. Dane is.
She only had to give his last name. Incidentally, it's the same as mine.
Damn it.
Well, Amy offered it to me, too.
I'm not planning on taking the trip, but I'll be damned if Ethan is getting it. He blinks to the side and then back to me. I've seen Ethan Thomas blink those lashes and use that dangerously uneven smile to sweet-talk Tia Maria into bringing him freshly made tamales. I know he can charm when he wants. Clearly, he doesn't want right now, because his tone comes out flat.
Olive, I have vacation time I need to take.
And now the fire is rising in me. Why does he think he deserves this? Did he have a 74-item wedding to-do list on fancy stationery? No, he did not. And come to think of it, that speech of his was lukewarm. Bet he wrote it in the groom suite while he was chugging back a plastic pitcher of warm Budweiser. Well, I say, I'm unemployed against my will, so I think I probably need the vacation more than you do. The frown deepens.
That makes no sense.
He pauses.
Wait, you were laid off from Bukkake?
I scowl at him. It's Bukkake, dumbass, and not that it's any of your business, but yes, I was laid off 2 months ago. I'm sure that gives you an immeasurable thrill.
A little.
You are Voldemort. Ethan shrugs and then reaches up, scratching his jaw.
I suppose we could both go.
I narrow my eyes and hope I don't look like I am mentally diagramming his sentence, even though I am. It sounded like he suggested we go...
On their honeymoon?
I ask incredulously. He nods.
Together?
He nods again.
Are you high? Not presently.
Ethan, we can barely stand to sit next to each other at an hour-long meal.
From what I gather, he says, they want a suite. It'll be huge. We won't even really have to see each other. This vacation is packed. Ziplining, snorkeling, hikes, surfing. Come on. We can orbit around each other for 10 days without committing a violent felony.
From inside the bridal suite, Amy groans out a low, gravelly,
"Go, Olive."
I turn to her. "But it's Ethan."
"Shit," Diego mumbles. "If I can take this garbage can with me, I'll go."
In my peripheral vision, Amy lifts a sallow arm, waving it limply.
"Ethan's not that bad."
"Isn't he, though?" I look back at him, sizing him up. Too tall, too fit, too classically pretty. Never friendly, never trustworthy, never any fun. He puts on an innocent smile, innocent on the surface. A flash of teeth, a dimple, but in his eyes, it's all black souled. Then I think of Maui. Crashing surf, pineapple, cocktails, and sunshine. Oh, sunshine. A glance out the window shows only dark sky. But I know the cold that lies out there. I know the car grime, yellowed snow lining the streets. I know the days that are so cold my wet hair would freeze if I didn't completely dry it before leaving the apartment. I know that by the time April comes and it still isn't consistently warm, I will be hunched over and resigned, Skeksis-like.
"Whether you're coming or not," he says,
cutting into my rapid spiral down the mental drain pipe,
"I'm going to Maui."
He leans in.
"And I'm going to have the best fucking time of my life."
I look back over my shoulder at Amy, who nods encouragingly, albeit slowly, and a fire ignites in my chest at the thought of being here, surrounded by snow and the smell of vomit and the bleak landscape of unemployment while Ethan is lying poolside with a cocktail in his hand. "Fine," I tell him, and then lean forward to press a finger into his chest. "I'm taking Amy's spot, but you keep to your space and I'll keep to mine." He salutes me.
"I wouldn't have it any other way."
Chapter 4. Turns out I'm willing to take my six sisters' dream honeymoon, but I have to draw a line at airline fraud. Because I am essentially broke, finding a last-minute flight from the freezing tundra to Maui in January, at least one that I can afford, requires some creativity. Ethan is no help at all, probably because he's one of those highly evolved 30-something guys who has an actual savings account and never has to dig in his car's ashtray for change at the drive-thru. Must be nice. But we do agree that we need to travel together. As much as I'd like to ditch him as soon as possible, the travel company did make it abundantly clear that if there is any fraud afoot, we will be charged the full balance of the vacation package. It's either the proximity of probable vomit or the proximity of me that sends Ethan halfway down the hall toward his own room with a muttered, "Just let me know what I owe you," before I can warn him exactly how little that might be. Fortunately, my sister taught me well, and in the end I have two, so cheap they're practically free, tickets to Hawaii. I'm not sure why they're so cheap, but I try not to think too much about it. A plane is a plane, and getting to Maui is all that really matters, right? It'll be fine. So maybe Thrifty Jet isn't the flashiest airline, but it's not that bad and certainly doesn't warrant the constant fidgeting and barrage of heavy sighs from the man sitting next to me. "You know I can hear you, right?" Ethan is quiet for a moment before he turns another page in his magazine. He slides his eyes to me in a silent, "I can't believe I put you in charge of this." I'm not sure I've ever seen anyone aggressively flip through a copy of Knitting World before now. It's a nice touch to keep magazines in the terminal like we're at the gynecologist's office, but it's a little disconcerting that this one is from 2007. I tamp down the ever-present urge to reach over and flick his ear. We're supposed to pass as newlyweds on this trip. Might as well start trying to fake it now.
So, just to close the loop on this stupid squabble, I say, if you were going to have such a strong opinion about our flights, you shouldn't have told me to take care of it.
If I knew you were going to book us on a greyhound with wings, I wouldn't have.
He looks up and glances around in horrified wonder.
I didn't even know this part of the airport existed.
I roll my eyes and then meet the gaze of the woman sitting across from us, who is clearly eavesdropping. Lowering my voice, I lean in with a saccharine smile. If I knew you were going to be such a nitpicker, I would have happily told you to shove it and get your own damn ticket.
Nitpick?
Ethan points to where the plane is parked outside what I think is a plexiglass window.
Have you seen our aircraft? I'll be amazed if they don't ask us to pitch in for fuel.
I take the magazine from his hand and scan an article on summer sherbet tops and cool cotton cable pullovers. Nobody is forcing you to take a free dream trip to Maui, I say. And for the record, not all of us can buy expensive same-day airplane tickets. I told you I was on a budget. He snorts.
Obviously, I didn't know what kind of budget you meant. Had I known, I would have loaned you the cost.
And take money from your sexual companion fund? I pressed a horrified hand to my chest. I wouldn't dare. Ethan takes the magazine back.
Look, Olivia, I'm just sitting here reading. If you want to bicker, go up there and ask the gate agents to move us to first class.
I move in to ask how it's possible that he's headed to Maui, and yet somehow even more unpleasant than usual when my phone vibrates in my pocket. It's most likely one of the following. A. Amy with a vomit update. B. Amy calling to remind me about something I've forgotten and don't have time to get now anyway. C. One of my cousins with gossip. Or D. Mom wanting me to ask Dad something, or tell Dad something, or call Dad something. As unpleasant as all of these possibilities sound, I'd still rather listen to any of them than have a conversation with Ethan Thomas. Holding up my phone, I stand with a let me know if we board and get nothing but a noncommittal grunt in return. The phone rings again, but it's not my sister on the screen. It's an unfamiliar number with a Twin Cities area code. Hello?
I'm calling for Olive Torres.
This is Olive.
This is Casey Hugh, Human Resources at Hamilton Biosciences. How are you?
My heart bursts into a gallop as I mentally flip through the dozens of interviews I've had in the past 2 months. They were all for medical science liaison positions, a fancy term for the scientists who meet with physicians to speak more technically than sales folk can about various drugs on the market. But the one at Hamilton was at the top of my list because of the company's flu vaccine focus. My background is virology, and not having to learn an entirely new biological system in a matter of weeks is always a bonus. But to be frank, at this point I was ready to apply to Hooters if that's what it would take to cover rent. With the phone pressed to my ear, I cross to a quieter side of the terminal and try not to sound as desperate as I'm feeling. After the bridesmaid dress fiasco, I am far more realistic about my ability to pull off the orange Hooters shorts and shimmery pantyhose.
I'm doing well, I say. Thanks for asking. I'm calling because, after considering all the applications, Mr. Hamilton would like to offer you the medical scientist liaison position. Are you still interested?
I turn on my heel, looking back toward Ethan as if the sheer awesomeness of these words is enough to set off a flare gun of joy over my head. He's still frowning down at his knitting magazine.
Oh my God! I say, free hand flapping in front of my face. Yes, absolutely.
A paycheck. Steady income. Being able to sleep at night without fear of impending homelessness.
Do you know when you can start? She asks. I have a memo here from Mr. Hamilton that reads, the sooner the better.
Start? I wince, looking around me at all the cheapo travelers wearing plastic leis and Hawaiian print shirts.
Soon. Now. Except not now. Not for a week. 10 days, actually. I can start in 10 days. I have...
An announcement plays overhead, and I look to see Ethan stand. With a frown, he gestures to where people are starting to line up. My brain goes into excitement chaos overdrive.
We just had a family thing, and also I need to see a sick relative, and...
That's fine, Olive, she says calmly, mercifully cutting me off. I squeeze my forehead, wincing at my stupid lying babble. It's just after the holidays, and everyone is still crazy. I'll put you down for a tentative start date of Monday, January 21st. Does that work for you?
I exhale for what feels like the first time since I answered the phone. That would be perfect.
Great, Casey says. Expect an email soon with an offer letter, along with some paperwork we'll need you to sign ASAP if you choose to officially accept. A digital or scanned signature is fine. Welcome to Hamilton Biosciences. Congratulations, Olive.
I walk back to Ethan in a daze.
Finally,
he says, with his carry-on slung over one shoulder and mine over the other.
We're the last group to board. I thought I was going to.
He stops, eyes narrowing as they make a circuit of my face.
Are you okay? You look... smiling.
My phone call is still playing on a loop in my ears. I want to check my call history and hit redial just to make sure Casey had the right Olive Torres. I was saved from terrible food poisoning, managed to snag a free vacation, and was offered a job in a single 24-hour span. This sort of luck doesn't happen to me. What is going on?
Ethan snaps his fingers, and I startle to find him leaning in, looking like he wishes he had a stick to poke me with.
Everything okay there? Change of plans, or...
I got a job.
It seems to take a moment for my words to sink in.
Just now?
I interviewed a couple weeks ago. I start after Hawaii. I expect him to look visibly disappointed that I'm not backing out of this trip. Instead, he lifts his brows and offers a quiet,
"That's great, Olive. Congratulations."
Before herding me toward the line of people boarding. I'm surprised he didn't ask me whether I would be joining their janitorial team, or at least say he hopes my new job selling heroin to at-risk children treats me well. I did not expect sincere. I'm never on the receiving end of his charm, even if the charm just now was diluted. I know how to handle sincere Ethan about as well as I would know how to handle a hungry bear.
Thanks.
I quickly text Diego, Amy, and my parents, separately, of course, to let them know the good news, and then we're standing at the threshold to the jetway, handing over our boarding passes. Reality sinks in and blends with joy. With the job stress alleviated, I can really leave the Twin Cities for 10 days. I can treat this trip like an actual vacation on a tropical island. Yes, it's with my nemesis, but still, I'll take it. The jetway is little more than a rickety bridge that leads from our dinky terminal to the even dinkier plane. The line moves slowly as the people ahead of us try to shove their oversized bags into the miniature overhead compartments. With Amy, I would turn and ask why people don't simply check their bags so we can get in and out on time, but Ethan has managed to go a full 5 minutes without finding something to complain about. I'm not going to give him any bait. We climb into our seats. The plane is so narrow that in each row, there are only 2 seats on each side of the aisle. They're so close together, though, they're essentially one bench with a flimsy armrest between them. Ethan is plastered against my side. I have to ask him to lean up onto one butt cheek so I can locate the other half of my seatbelt. After the disconcertingly gravelly click of metal into metal, he straightens, and we register in unison that we're touching from shoulder to thigh, separated only by a hard, immobile armrest midway down. He looks over the heads of the people in front of us.
I don't trust this plane.
He looks back down the aisle.
Or this crew. Was the pilot wearing a parachute?
Ethan is always, annoyingly, the epitome of cool, calm, and collected. But now that I'm paying attention, I see that his shoulders are tense, and his face has gone pale. I think he's sweating. He's scared, I realize, and suddenly his mood at the airport makes a lot more sense. As I watch, he pulls a penny from his pocket and smooths a thumb over it.
What's that? A penny?
My goodness, this is delightful.
You mean like a good luck penny?
With a scowl, he ignores me and slips it back into his pocket. I never thought I had good luck, I tell him, feeling magnanimous. But look, my allergy kept me from eating the buffet. I'm going to Maui, and I got a job. Wouldn't it be hilarious? I laugh and roll my head in his direction. To have a streak of good luck for the first time in my life, only to go down in a fiery plane crash? Judging by his expression, Ethan does not see the humor at all. When a member of the flight crew walks by, he shoots an arm out in front of me, stopping her.
Excuse me, can you tell me how many miles are on this plane?
The flight attendant smiles. Aircraft don't have miles. They have flight hours. I can see Ethan swallowing down his impatience.
Okay, then how many flight hours are on this plane?
She tilts her head, understandably puzzled by his question.
I'd have to ask the captain, sir.
Ethan leans across me to get closer, and I push back into my seat, scrunching my nose against the obnoxiously pleasant smell of his soap.
And what do we think of the captain? Competent? Trustworthy?
Ethan winks, and I realize he's no less anxious than he was a minute ago, but he's coping via flirtation.
Well-rested?
Captain Blake is a great pilot, she says, tilting her head and smiling.
I look back and forth between the two of them, and dramatically fidget with the gold wedding band I borrowed from Tia Silvia. No one notices. Ethan gives her a smile, and wow, he could probably ask her for her social security number, a major credit card, and to bear his children, and she'd say yes.
Of course, he says. I mean, it's not like he's ever crashed a plane or anything, right?
Just the once, she says,
before straightening with a wink of her own and continuing on down the aisle. For the next hour, Ethan barely moves, doesn't speak, and holds himself as if breathing too hard or somehow jostling the plane will make it fall out of the sky. I reach for my iPad before realizing that, of course, we don't have Wi-Fi. I open a book, hoping to get lost in some delicious paranormal fun, but can't seem to focus. An 8-hour flight and there's no movie, I say to myself, glaring at the screenless seat back in front of me.
Maybe they're hoping your life flashing in front of your eyes will be distraction enough.
It lives.
I turn and look at him. Won't speaking upset the barometric pressure in the cabin or something? Reaching into his pocket, he pulls out the penny again.
I haven't ruled it out.
We haven't spent much time together, but from stories I've heard from both Dane and Amy, I feel like I've built a pretty accurate picture of Ethan in my head. Daredevil, adventure hound, ambitious, cutthroat. The man clinging to the armrest as if his very life depends on it is not that guy. With a deep breath, he rolls his shoulders, grimacing. I'm 5'4" and mildly uncomfortable. Ethan's legs have to be at least 10 feet long. I can't imagine what it's like for him. After he speaks, it's like the stillness spell has broken. His knee bounces with nervous energy. His fingers tap against the drink tray until even the sweet old lady wearing a day-glow muumuu in front of us is giving him a dirty look. He smiles an apology.
Tell me about that lucky penny of yours, I say, motioning to the coin still clutched in his fist.
Why do you think it's lucky?
He seems to internally weigh the risk of interacting with me against the potential relief of distraction.
I don't really want to encourage conversation, he says, but what do you see?
He opens his palm. It's from 1955, I note.
What else?
I look closer. Oh, you mean how the lettering is doubled? He leans in, pointing.
You can really see it right here, above Lincoln's head.
Sure enough, the letters that read, "In God We Trust," have been stamped twice.
I've never seen anything like that before, I admit.
There's only a few of them out there.
He rubs his thumb over the surface and slips it back into his pocket.
Is it valuable? I ask.
Worth about $1,000.
Holy shit, I gasp.
We hit some mild turbulence, and Ethan's eyes move wildly around the plane, as if the oxygen masks might deploy at any moment. Hoping to distract him again, I ask, "Where did you get it?"
I bought a banana just before a job interview, and it was part of my change.
And?
And not only did I get the job, but when I went to have some coins rolled, the machine spit the penny out because it thought it was a fake. I've carried it around ever since.
Don't you worry you're going to drop it?
That's the whole point of luck, isn't it? He says through gritted teeth.
You have to trust that it's not fleeting.
Are you trusting that right now?
He tries to relax, shaking out his hands. If I'm reading his expression correctly, he's regretting telling me anything. But the turbulence intensifies, and all 6+ feet of him stiffen again.
You know, I say, you don't strike me as someone who'd be afraid of flying.
He takes a series of deep breaths.
I'm not.
This doesn't really require any sort of rebuttal. The way I have to pry his fingers from my side of the armrest communicates it plainly. Ethan relents.
It's not my favorite.
I think of the weekends I spent with Amy because Dane was off on some wild adventure with his brother. All the arguments those trips caused.
Aren't you supposed to be, like, Bear Grylls or something?
He looks at me frowning.
Who?
The trip to New Zealand. The river rafting. Death-defying bro trip. Surfing in Nicaragua. You fly for fun all the time.
He rests his head back against the seat and closes his eyes again, ignoring me. As the squeaky wheels of the beverage cart make their way down the aisle, Ethan crowds into my space again, flagging down the flight attendant.
Can I get a scotch and soda?
He glances at me and amends his order.
2, actually.
I wave him off. I don't like scotch. He blinks.
I know.
Actually, we don't have scotch, she says.
A gin and tonic?
She winces. His shoulders slump.
A beer?
That I have.
She reaches into a drawer and hands him 2 cans of generic-looking beer. That's $22.
$22 American?
He moves to hand back the cans.
We also have Coke products. They're free, she says. But if you'd like ice, that's $2.
Wait, I say, and reach into my bag.
You're not buying my beer, Olive.
You're right, I'm not. I pull out 2 coupons and hand them over. Amy is.
Of course she is.
The flight attendant continues on down the aisle.
Some respect, please, I say. My sister's obsessive need to get things for free is why we're here.
And why 200 of our friends and family were in the emergency room.
I feel a protective itch for my sister. The police already said she wasn't responsible. He cracks his beer open with a satisfying pop.
And the 6 o'clock news.
I mean to glare, but am momentarily distracted by the way his Adam's apple moves as he drinks. And drinks. And drinks.
Okay.
I don't know why I'm surprised, he says. It was doomed anyway.
The itch flares to a full-on blaze. Hello, Ethan. That's your brother and sister in...
Calm down, Olive. I don't mean them.
He takes another gulp and I stare.
I meant weddings in general.
He shudders and a note of revulsion coats the next word.
Romance.
Oh, he's one of those. I admit my parental model of romance has been lacking, but Tio Omar and Tia Silvia have been married for 45 years... Tio Hugo and Tia Maria have been married for nearly 30. I have examples of lasting relationships all around me, so I know they exist, even if I suspect they might not exist for me. I want to believe that Amy hasn't started something doomed, that she can be truly happy with Dane.
Ethan drains at least half of the first beer in a long chug, and I try to piece together the extent of my Ethan knowledge. He's 34, 2 years older than us and Dane. He does some sort of math thing for a living, which explains why he's such a laugh a minute. He carries at least one form of personal disinfectant on his person at all times, and he won't eat at buffets. I think he was single when we met, but not long after he entered into a relationship that seemed at least semi-serious. I don't think his brother liked her because I distinctly recall Dane ranting one night about how much it would suck if Ethan proposed to her. Oh my God, am I going to Maui with someone's fiancé? You're not dating anyone now, right? I ask. What was her name? Sierra or Simba or something?
Simba?
He almost cracks a smile. Almost. No doubt it shocks you when someone doesn't keep close track of your love life. His forehead scrunches up in a frown.
I wouldn't go on a fake honeymoon with you if I had a girlfriend.
Sinking back in his seat, he closes his eyes again.
No more talking. You're right, it shakes the plane.
With lays around our necks and the heavy ocean air adhering our clothing to our skin, we catch a cab just outside the airport. I spend most of the ride with my face pressed to the window, taking in the bright blue sky and the glimpses of ocean visible through the trees. I can already feel my hair frizzing in the humidity, but it's worth it. Maui is stunning. Ethan is quiet beside me, watching the view and occasionally tapping something into his phone. Not wanting to disturb the peace, I snap a few blurry photos as we drive down the two-lane highway and send them to Amy. She replies with a simple emoji. Frown face. I know, I'm sorry. Don't be sorry. I mean, I have Mom with me for the foreseeable future. Who's the real winner here? Enjoy yourself or I'll kick your ass. My poor sister. It's true that I'd rather be here with Amy or anyone else for that matter, but we're here, and I'm determined to make the most of it. I have 10 beautiful, sun-drenched days ahead of me. When the taxi slows and makes a final right turn, the hotel grounds unfurl in front of us. The building is massive. A towering, tiered structure of glass, balconies, and greenery spilling everywhere. The ocean crashes right there, so close that someone standing on one of the higher floors could probably throw a rock and make it into the surf. We drive down a wide lane lined on both sides with full-grown banyan trees. Hundreds of lanterns sway in the breeze, suspended from branches overhead. If it's this gorgeous during the day, I can't imagine the sight once the sun goes down. Music filters through speakers hidden in the thick foliage, and next to me, even Ethan is sitting forward, eyes trained on the grounds as we pass. We come to a stop, and two valet attendants appear out of nowhere. We climb out, stumbling a bit as we look around, eyes meeting over the roof of the car. It smells like plumeria, and the sound of the waves crashing nearly drowns out the sound of engines idling at the valet. I'm pretty sure Ethan and I have reached our first enthusiastic consensus. Holy shit, this place is amazing. I've been so distracted that I startle when the first valet pulls out a handful of luggage tags and asks for my name. My name? The valet smiles.
For the luggage.
The luggage, right. My name is, well, it's a funny story. Ethan rounds the car and immediately takes my hand.
Torres, he says. Amy Torres, soon to be Thomas, and husband.
He leans in, pressing a stiff kiss to the side of my head for realism.
She's a bit wiped from the trip.
Stunned, I watch as he turns back to the valet and looks like he's resisting the urge to wipe his lips with his hand.
Perfect,
the attendant says, scribbling the name on a few of the tags and attaching them to the handles of our luggage.
Check-in is through those doors there.
He smiles and points to an open-air lobby.
Your bags will be brought up to your room. Thank you.
Ethan presses a few folded bills into the valet's palm and steers me toward the hotel.
Smooth,
he says, as soon as we're out of earshot. Ethan, I'm a terrible liar.
Really, you hit it so well.
It's never been my strength, okay? Those of us who aren't summoned by the Dark Mark consider honesty to be a virtue. He curls his fingers toward his palm, beckoning.
Give me both IDs, yours and Amy's, so you don't accidentally hand them the wrong one at the front desk. I'll put my credit card down for incidentals, and we'll square it up later.
An argument bubbles up in my chest, but he has a point. Even now, with a bit of mental rehearsal, I am sure the next time someone asks my name, I will shout, "I am named Amy." Better than nearly spilling our entire cover story to a valet attendant, but not by much. I reach into my purse for my wallet and pull out both IDs. "But put them in the safe when we're in the room." He slips them in his wallet next to his own.
"Let me do the talking at reception. From what Dane told me, the rules of this vacation are really strict, and even just looking at you, I can tell you're lying about something."
I scrunch my face, and then frown and smile in quick succession to try to clear it. Ethan watches, expression mildly horrified.
"Get it together, Olive. I'm sure it was on my bucket list at some point, but I don't really want to sleep on the beach tonight."
Melakaliki Maka plays quietly overhead as we enter the hotel. Holiday festivity lingers post-New Year's. Massive Christmas trees flank the entrance to the lobby, their branches dripping with twinkling lights and the weight of hundreds of red and gold ornaments. Gauzy garlands and more ornaments hang from the ceiling, wrap around columns, and sit in baskets and bowls decorating every flat surface. Water from a giant fountain splashes into a pool below, and the scents of plumeria and chlorine intermingle in the humid air. We're greeted almost immediately at reception. My stomach twists and my smile is too bright as a beautiful Polynesian woman takes Amy's ID and Ethan's credit card. She enters the name and smiles.
"Congratulations on winning the sweepstakes."
"I love sweepstakes," I say, too brightly, and Ethan elbows me in the side. And then her eyes linger on Amy's photo a moment before slowly blinking up to me.
"I've put on a little weight," I blurt.
Because there is no good response to this, she gives me a polite smile and begins entering the information. I don't know why I feel compelled to continue, but I do. "I lost my job this fall, and it's been one interview after another. I can feel Ethan tensing at my side, the casual hand on my lower back clutching at my shirt until his grip must resemble a bird of prey trying to put a struggling field mouse out of its misery. I tend to bake when I'm stressed, which is why I look a little different in the photo of me. But I did get a job, today actually, if you can believe it. Not that it's unbelievable or anything, the job or the wedding." When I finally come up for air, both the woman and Ethan are just staring at me. Smiling tightly, she slides a folder filled with various maps and itineraries across the counter.
"It looks like we have you in our honeymoon suite."
My brain trips on the phrase honeymoon suite and fills with images of the room Lois and Clark Kent share in Superman 2. The pink fabrics, the heart-shaped tub, the giant bed.
"The romance package is all-inclusive," she continues, "and you can choose from a number of amenities, including candlelit dinners in the Molokini Garden, a couple's massage on the spa balcony at sunset, turn-down service with rose petals and champagne."
Ethan and I exchange a brief look.
"We're really more the outdoorsy types," I cut in.
"Are there any activities available that are a little more rugged and a lot less naked?" Cue the awkward pause. She clears her throat.
"You can find a more comprehensive list in your room. Take a look, and we can schedule anything you like."
I thank her and chance a peek over at Ethan, who is now gazing at me lovingly, which means he's planning the non-buffet menu for my funeral reception after he's murdered me and hidden my body. With a final swipe of our room keys to activate them, she hands them to Ethan and smiles warmly.
"You're on the top floor. Elevators are around that corner there. I'll have your bag sent up immediately."
"Thank you."
He manages easily, without spilling the details of the past year of his life. But I'm pleased to see him falter in his smooth footsteps as she calls out after us,
Congratulations, Mr. and Mrs. Thomas. Enjoy your honeymoon.
Chapter 5. The lock chimes and the double doors swing open. My breath catches in my throat. Never in my life have I stayed in a suite, let alone one this opulent. I pour one out for Amy's dream honeymoon and try not to feel grateful that she's back in St. Paul suffering so that I can be here. But it's hard. Objectively, this has turned out very well for me. Well, mostly. I look up at Ethan, who gestures for me to lead us inside. Ahead of us is an absurdly spacious living room, with a couch, love seat, two chairs, and low-glass coffee table on a fluffy white rug. The table is topped with a beautiful violet orchid in a woven basket, a complicated remote that looks like it probably operates a bionic housekeeper, and a bucket with a bottle of champagne and two flutes that have Mr. and Mrs. etched in the glass. I meet Ethan's eyes only long enough for both of our instinctive sneers to take root. Just to the left of the living room is a small dining nook, with a table, two brass candlesticks, and a tiki-themed bar cart covered in all manner of ornate cocktail glasses. I mentally gulp down about four margaritas and get an anticipatory buzz from all the upcoming free booze I'm about to enjoy. But at the far end is the true beauty of the room, a wall of glass doors that open to a balcony overlooking the crashing Maui surf. I gasp, sliding them to the side and stepping out into the warm January breeze. The temperature, so balmy, so not Minnesota, shocks me into a surreal awareness. I'm in Maui, in a dream suite, on an all-inclusive trip. I've never been to Hawaii. I've never done anything dreamlike, period. I start to dance, but only realize I'm doing it when Ethan steps out onto the balcony and dumps an enormous bucket of water on my joy by clearing his throat and squinting out across the waves. He looks like he's thinking, I've seen better. This view is amazing, I say, almost confrontationally. Slowly blinking over to me, he says, as is your propensity to overshare. I already told you I'm not a good liar. I got nervous when she was looking at Amy's ID, okay? He holds his hands up in sarcastic surrender. With a scowl, I escape Mr. Buzzkill and head back inside. Just to the immediate right of the entry, there's a small kitchen I completely bypassed on my way to the balcony. Past the kitchen is a hallway that leads to a small bathroom, and just past it, the opulent master bedroom. I step inside and see there's another huge bathroom here with a giant tub big enough for two. I turn to face the gigantic bed. I want to roll in it. I want to take off my clothes and slip into the silky... I feel the tires come to a screeching halt inside my brain. But how? How have we come this far without discussing the logistics of sleeping arrangements? Did we both truly assume that the honeymoon suite would have two bedrooms? Without a doubt, we both would happily die on the not sharing a bed with you hill. But how do we decide who gets the only bedroom? Obviously, I think I should. But knowing Ethan, he probably thinks he'll take the bed, and I'll happily build my little troll fort under the dining table. I step out of the bedroom just as Ethan is closing the wide double doors, and then we are sealed into this awkward moment of unprepared cohabitation. We turn in unison to gaze at our suitcases. Wow, I say.
Yeah, he agrees.
It's really nice. Ethan coughs. A clock ticks somewhere in the room, too loud in the awkward silence. Tick, tick, tick.
It is.
He reaches up, scratching the back of his neck. Ocean waves crash in the background.
And obviously, you're the woman. You should take the bedroom.
Some of those words are the ones I want to hear, and some of them are just terrible. I tilt my head, scowling. I don't get the bedroom because I'm a woman. I get the room because my sister won it. He gives a douchey little wince shrug and says,
I mean, if we're going by those standards, then I should get the room, since Amy got it partly using Dane's Hilton status.
She still managed to organize it all, I say. If it was up to Dane, they'd be staying at the Doubletree in Moncato this week.
You realize you're just arguing with me for the sake of arguing, right? I already told you you could have the room.
I point at him. What you're doing right now isn't arguing.
He sighs like I am the most irritating person alive. Take the bedroom. I'll sleep on the couch.
He gazes at it. It looks plush and nice, sure, but it is still a couch, and we're here for 10 nights.
I'll be fine, he adds with a hefty spoonful of martyrdom thrown in.
Okay, if you're going to act like I'm beholden to you, then I don't want it.
He exhales slowly and then walks over to his suitcase, lifting it and carrying it to the bedroom.
Wait, I call. I take that back. I do want the bedroom.
Ethan stops without turning to look at me.
I'm just going to put some things in the drawers, so I'm not living out of my suitcase in the living room for 10 days.
He glances at me over his shoulder.
I presume that's okay?
He is so careful balancing being generous with being passive-aggressive that I am all mixed up about how big an asshole he really is. It makes it impossible to measure out the correct dose of snark.
It's fine, I say, and add magnanimously, take all the dresser space you want.
I hear his bemused snort as he disappears from view. The bottom line is that we don't get along, but the other bottom line is that we don't really need to. Hope fills me like helium. Ethan and I can move around each other without having to interact, and do whatever we like to make this our individual dream vacations. For me, this slice of heaven will include the spa, ziplining, snorkeling, and every manner of adventure I can find, including adventures of the alcoholic variety. If Ethan's idea of a perfect vacation is brooding, complaining, and sighing exasperatedly, he can surely do that anywhere he wants, but I don't have to endure it. I quickly check my email and see a new one from Hamilton. The offer is, well, suffice it to say, I don't need to look through anything else to know I'll take it. They could tell me my desk was perched on the lip of a volcano, and I would accept in a heartbeat for this kind of money. Pulling out my iPad, I digitally sign everything and send it off. Practically vibrating, I thumb through the list of hotel activities and decide that the first order of business is a celebratory facial and body scrub down at the spa. Solo. I don't think Ethan is much of a pampering type, but the worst thing would be to have him lift a cooling cucumber slice off my eyelid and glare down at me while I'm lounging in a robe.
Ethan, I call. What are you up to this afternoon?
In the answering silence, I sense his panic that I might be requesting his company.
I'm not asking because I want to hang, I add quickly.
He hesitates again, and when he finally answers, his voice comes out tinny, like he's actually climbed into the closet.
Thank God.
Well, I'm probably going to head down to the spa.
Do whatever you want. Just don't use all the massage credits, he tacks on.
I scowl, even though he can't see me.
How many times do you think I'm going to get rubbed down in a single afternoon?
I'd rather not contemplate.
I flip the bird in his general direction, consult the directory to confirm that the spa has showers I can use, grab my key card, and leave Ethan to his surly unpacking. Guilt edges in a tiny bit when I am being pampered and indulged for nearly 3 hours using Amy's name. My face is exfoliated, massaged, and moisturized. My body is covered in clay, scrubbed until I'm red and tingly all over, and then covered with warm eucalyptus towels. I make a silent promise to put aside money from each paycheck for a while so that I can send my sister to a lavish spa back home when she no longer feels like a freshly reanimated corpse. It may not be Maui, but any little bit I can pay her back for this, I'm committed to do. All I have to do this entire week is tip the staff. It seems so preposterous. This type of blissful, transcendent spa experience isn't for me. I'm the one who gets a fungal infection from a pedicure in the cities and a bikini wax burn at a spa in Duluth. Limp as a jellyfish all over and drunk on endorphins, I look up at my therapist, Kelly. That was amazing. If I ever win the lottery, I'm going to move here and pay you to do that every day. She probably hears that daily, but she laughs like I am exceedingly clever.
I'm glad you enjoyed yourself.
Enjoyed myself is an understatement. Not only was it dreamy, but it was a full 3 hours away from Ethan. I'm led back to the lounge where I'm told to take as much time as I want. Diving into the plush couch, I pull my phone from the pocket of my robe. I'm unsurprised to see messages from my mom. Tell your dad to bring us some toilet paper and Gatorade. My sister, tell mom to go home. Diego, is this punishment for making fun of Natalia's terrible bleach job? I'd say I'm sorry, but I've seen mops with fewer split ends. And Jules, do you care if I stay at your place while you're gone? This thing is like the plague, and I might have to burn down my apartment. Too tired and blissed out to deal with any of it now, I pick up a well-loved copy of Us Weekly. But not even celebrity gossip or the latest Bachelor drama can keep me awake, and I feel my eyelids closing under the weight of happy exhaustion.
Ms. Torres?
Hmm? I hum, groggy.
Ms. Torres, is that you?
Eyes bolting open, I nearly overturn the cucumber water I've got precariously perched on my chest. When I sit, I look up, and nearly all I see is an enormous white mustache. And, oh, I know this mustache. I first met this mustache at a highly important interview. I remember at the time thinking, wow, a Sam Elliott doppelganger is the CEO here at Hamilton Biosciences. Who knew? My eyes move up. Yes, the Sam Elliott doppelganger, Charles Hamilton, my new boss's boss, is right in front of me at the Spa Grande in Maui.
Wait, what? Mr. Hamilton, hi!
I thought that was you.
He looks tanner than when I saw him a few weeks ago, his white hair a touch longer, and he definitely wasn't wearing a fluffy white robe and slippers. He crosses the room, arms outstretched for a hug. Oh, okay, we're going to do this. I stand, and he catches my expression of discomfort, because I don't usually hug my bosses, especially not when naked under a robe. And then I see when he registers that his brain is on vacation, and he doesn't hug his employees either. But we're committed now and come together in an awkward side hug that ensures our robes don't gape anywhere.
If this isn't a small world, he says once he's pulled away. Recharging the batteries before starting your new adventure at Hamilton? That's exactly what I like to see. Can't take care of others if you don't take care of yourself first.
Exactly. My nerves have dumped buckets of adrenaline into my veins. Going from zen to new boss alert is jarring. I pull the tie on my robe a little tighter.
And I want to thank you again for the opportunity. I am beyond excited to be joining the team.
Mr. Hamilton waves me off.
The minute we spoke, I knew you'd be a great fit. Your dedication to Butaki was commendable. I always say that Hamilton is nothing without the good people working there. Honesty, integrity, loyalty, those are our hallmarks.
I nod. I like Mr. Hamilton. He has an impeccable reputation in the biosciences field and is known for being an incredibly involved and hands-on CEO, but I can't help but note that this line is an almost exact replica of the one he gave me as we shook hands at the end of the interview. Now that I've lied to about 20 people on the hotel's staff, hearing it here feels more ominous than inspiring. The sound of quickened footsteps can be heard on the other side of the door before a panicked Kelly bursts through.
Mrs. Thomas!
My stomach drops.
Oh, thank God you're still here. You left your wedding ring in the treatment room.
She offers an outstretched hand and places the simple band in my palm. I let out a deranged, silent scream inside my cranium while I managed to give her a muted thanks.
Mrs. Thomas? Hamilton prompts.
The therapist looks between us, obviously confused.
You mean Torres, he says.
No,
she blinks down to a clipboard and then back to us.
This is Mrs. Thomas, unless there's been some mistake.
I realize there are two things I can do here. One, I could admit that I had to take my sister's honeymoon because she got sick, and I am pretending to be married to a guy named Ethan Thomas so we can snag this sweet honeymoon package. Or, two, I could lie my face off and tell them that I just got married and, silly me, I'm not used to my new name yet. In either case, I am a liar. Option one leaves me with my integrity. However, with option two, I won't disappoint my new boss, especially given that half my interview was focused on building a workforce with a strong moral compass and people who put honesty and integrity above everything else, and won't end up sleeping on the beach, hungry and unemployed, with only a giant spa and hotel bill to use as shelter. I know there's an obvious right choice here, but I do not make it.
Oh, yeah, just got married.
Oh, God, why? Why does my mouth do this? That was honestly the worst choice. Because now, when we return home, I'm going to have to pretend to be married whenever I run into Mr. Hamilton, which could be daily, or fess up to getting fake divorced immediately after the fake wedding.
Gah!
His smile is so big it lifts the mustache. The therapist is relieved the weird moment of tension is gone and excuses herself with a smile. Still beaming, Mr. Hamilton reaches out, shaking my hand.
Well now, that is some wonderful news. Where was the wedding?
At least here I can be truthful. At the Hilton, downtown St. Paul.
My gosh, he says, shaking his head. Just starting out. What a blessing.
He leans in and winks.
My Molly and I are here celebrating our 30th anniversary. Can you believe it?
I make my eyes round like it's just wild that this white-haired man has been married for so long, and fumble through some noises about that being amazing and exciting, and you must just be so happy. And then he takes out a metaphorical anvil and knocks me into the floor.
Why don't you two join us for dinner?
Me and Ethan, sitting beside each other at a table, having to touch and smile and pretend to love each other? I stifle a chortle. Oh, we couldn't impose. You two probably never get away together.
Of course we do. The kids are out of the house. It's just us two all the time. Come on, it's our last night, and I'm sure she's sick of me, to be honest.
He lets out a hearty laugh.
It wouldn't be any imposition at all.
If there's a way out of this situation, I'm not coming up with it fast enough. I think I have to bite the bullet. Smiling, and hoping I look far less terrified than I feel, I give in. I need this job, and am dying to land in Mr. Hamilton's good graces. I'm going to have to ask Ethan for a huge favor. I'm going to owe him so big, it makes me want to hurl.
Sure, Mr. Hamilton. Ethan and I would love that.
He reaches out and squeezes my shoulder.
Call me Charlie.
The hallway weaves and elongates in front of me. I wish it weren't just an illusion born from dread, and that it really were 5 miles to our suite. But it isn't, and sooner than I'd like, I'm back at the room, half praying that Ethan is out doing something amazing until tomorrow, and half praying that he's here so we can make it to dinner with the Hamiltons. As soon as I walk in, I see him sitting on the balcony. Why is he in Maui, hanging out in the hotel room? Although, now that I think about it, it sounds lovely. I grow instinctively itchy at the prospect of sharing the homebody gene with him. At least he's changed into shorts and a t-shirt, and has his bare feet propped up on the ledge. The wind blows his dark hair all over his head, but I imagine him squinting judgmentally out at the surf, silently telling the waves they could do better. When I move closer, I see that he's holding a cocktail in a highball glass. His bare arms are tanned and toned. His legs are surprisingly muscular and seem to go on forever. For some reason, I expected that, in shorts and a t-shirt, he'd look like a string bean with awkward limbs bending at odd angles. Maybe it's because he's so tall. Or maybe it was just easier to tell myself that only his face could be pretty, and he'd be gnarled and gangly beneath his clothes. Quite frankly, he's so well-rounded physically, it's a little unfair. I slide open the door as quietly as I can. He looks pretty relaxed. I'm sure he's thinking about drowning puppies, but I'm not here to judge. At least not until after he's had dinner with my boss. Then it's on. I realize I'll need to be charming, so I slap a smile on my face. Hey there. He turns and his blue eyes narrow.
Olivia?
Wow, I am getting sick of his stupid name game. What are you up to, Elijah?
Just enjoying the view.
Well, that's nice. I didn't know you did that. He blinks back out to the water.
Did what?